Hello, my sisters and brothers. This is Steve Dougherty here, teaching pastor at Cross Point, and we are here with a more beloved Stephen Claybrook.
Hey, hey.
I think they probably heard that. We've kind of cobbled together a studio replete with a microphone and some cables and an upstairs office here because we wanted to create maybe what could be considered some supplemental material for the message that I did Sunday entitled Pain in this Jesus for Precedent series. And so if you haven't listened to that, this isn't going to make sense. If you're listening to this one first, you're doing it all wrong. So hit stop, go back and listen to the other one. And then know that this recording, brief as it will be, is really birthed out of the impulse that we get a lot. And that's to create like a part two, but not a follow-up Sunday, because the conversations and the questions are just so good. And so this message on Pain Sunday definitely made for a lot of great conversation, lots of great questions about, like, how do you do this? And so I want to respond to that question, how and steps and what do we do with this? And then at the end, I will read and we'll create some space in this recording if you weren't there on Sunday, because there were some questions up on the screen for people to sit in and to consider meditatively and prayerfully. So I'll make sure that you get a chance to experience that at the end of this recording. One of the centerpieces of Sunday is a quote I come back to quite often by Richard Rohr. And it's a longer quote, but right in the middle of it, he says, "If we don't learn to transform pain, we will most assuredly transmit it." In other words, if you don't learn to take everything that's happened to you in every way and do more with it than simply turn it into defensiveness and avoidance and really answering ugly with ugly. I mean, that a lot of people do that. It doesn't take any inspiration. Bad things happen to me, and so I'm just going to channel those bad things to other people because it gives me some sort of relief. If we don't learn to transform pain, then all we'll do is transmit it. And so the big question is, well, how do you actually transform it? Because we talked about Jesus and his background and his whole life and how he was so able to be compassionate to people, to be good to people, to suffer with. He was able to employ all of those disappointments and betrayals, all of that pain, all of that internal and external wounding that happened before he was even crucified. He turned it into a kind of knowledge. That's what compassion is. It's a kind of wisdom. Several months ago, I saw something that is, I think, probably the best illustration for me personally of how this works or how it can work that I've seen. I'm going to change the names here, but I've got a friend. We're going to call her Margaret. And not even 2 years ago, her husband was killed, leaving her and their three very young children wondering how they're going to get through. And they have. But it's been a steps forward, steps back daily sort of thing. And I confess, as a friend, and many of us that are friends of Margaret, we could probably say we have days at a time where we forget to even think or pray about it. She doesn't. This is an everyday, every night thing for her still. Devastating, as you can imagine. And there's still hardship to come, as the implications of having lost your husband and the kids having lost their father unfold in the future. Well, another tragedy happened, and this was just months ago. And we'll call this woman Patty. She lost her son. He was in his 20s, far too young. It was just a tragic accident. And it was, as you can imagine, devastating for the whole family, friends. This kid was loved and respected and well-known, and he died. And Patty came in one day to plan the funeral. It was going to be that Saturday, I believe. And as soon as she walked through the door, I tried to take conscious steps to become, you know, pastor, friend, encourager, don't try to explain anything, try to be helpful. All of the decisions that I've learned to make over the years to be the best version of that role that I'm playing. It's a very uncomfortable place for her, and so I try to make that as comfortable as possible. So I go into this mode. Well, Margaret was there, and Margaret got to Patty before I did. And when I walked up, Margaret had put her hands on Patty's shoulders and said, "We're going to get through this. But today, all you have to do is just let us help you plan for Saturday." And I watched her say that, and I watched something like relief in Patty's face, because everybody knew Margaret didn't read this in a book. This wasn't simply the fruit of having been doing this for years. Margaret was turning her own pain and grief into a kind of knowing. Compassion. That's what compassion and wisdom are, so much the same thing. She was able to employ all of that unresolved ugh inside of her into something that was beautiful, into light. And I won't soon forget that. That's the best example of watching someone transform pain rather than simply transmitting it into anger and bitterness and avoidant behavior. Now, sometimes those behaviors are the best you can do, and that's fine too. But that's a great illustration to me of what Richard was talking about. And so the question, well, then how do you do that? How do you, and this is a real question I've gotten in the last couple of days. How do I take this pain that I am currently feeling, or pain that has happened to me that I'm still carrying, and how do I turn it into something good? And I think that that's a good question. I think being able to ask the question is part of it. Just being ready to ask it is part of your readiness to start transforming, rather than being at risk of only transmitting. But I want to offer a word of caution about that. If you're trying to turn your pain into something good too quickly, if you don't actually experience your grief, if you don't actually know your suffering and get your arms around your hurt and your wounds and what has happened, if you're not honest with yourself about that, then trying too quickly to turn it into something good actually adds to your problem. And so I just want to add that word of caution, that if you're experiencing pain right now and you can't figure out what steps to take to hurry up and make it into something good, that might be a way that you're avoiding the issue. And a lot of people do that. And I would argue a lot of people in the church do that in a very high volume. How do I spiritualize or make righteous my behaviors and all that so that I don't have to face what hurts? So with that word of caution said, let me say something else about this. How do I turn pain? What are the steps by which I turn pain into compassion? You're going to hate me for this, but I mean it sincerely. I don't know that there are steps. In fact, I'm pretty sure that there aren't. And I'll say more about that in a second, but I don't want you to think of what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you like, here's the seven steps of turning pain into compassion. And you know, they all start with the same first letter or whatever. It doesn't work that way. This is about awareness. Let me tell you what I mean. I get angry, and anger is a thwarted will. I'm not getting my way. And I don't mean to make that sound as condescending as that can sound. I get angry when things don't go the way that I want them to, when I'm not perceived the way that I want to be perceived, when plans or timing doesn't happen according to my preferences. I get angry when things aren't going the way that I think that they should. That's because I have suffered pain, and I don't want to suffer any more pain or disappointment. And so I get angry because it looks like I'm about to suffer more pain and disappointment in some way. Well, that's probably why you get angry. So I don't know what the step is for having compassion on with angry people, but an awareness that when you're encountering an angry person, you're probably encountering someone who is disempowered, who has been wounded and is trying not to be wounded in their insides or their outsides again. That helps you to de-escalate a situation, to not become the rude thing that has just been said, to not get swept up into somebody else's contempt. My awareness of my own source material for my angers, oh, that helps me understand you. you're probably not angry as a person. You're feeling angry and expressing anger because deeper down, you're protecting yourself from hurt. Oftentimes I feel shut down or paralyzed or avoidant. And that's because sometimes my self-esteem is in the gutter. Sometimes I feel really insecure and I don't want to put myself or what I make out there because it could take some hits. It could be judged. It could be made fun of. It could cost me somehow socially. Well, that's probably true for a lot of people listening to this as well. My awareness of my shutting down because I'm trying to avoid the pain of being judged harshly, well, that helps me never to use the word lazy to describe somebody else. I would argue there is no lazier judgment than calling somebody lazy, especially when you're talking about kids. Why are you so lazy? Procrastination and avoidant behaviors and laziness, all of that is keeping yourself in a protective shell. Like, I would rather not do something than do it and have it be judged as being deficient. Well, that's probably a hit you or I took early on in life. And so it's just self-protective behavior. Calling it lazy doesn't change the behavior. It just makes people probably be more duplicitous and pretentious in front of you. So pain making me avoid things gives me intel to say, well, you're not being lazy. You took some hits. You probably are really sensitive to being judged. Well, I'm not going to judge you. And I want to make that clear over months and years. We could talk about impulse and foolishness. I often make impulsive dietary decisions when I feel stressed. We make a joke about this, eating your feelings. And we're all doing that to one degree or another. But there's more than food to the category of impulsive or foolish behaviors. We do all sorts of things to avoid certain feelings or to bury feelings, to medicate feelings. Well, I know that I'm capable of that. I'm aware of that. And so if I see impulsive, foolish behaviors in somebody else, I try to remember that they're not fools. They're not actually impulsive. That is a behavior that's probably designed to protect themselves from further hurt, disappointment, betrayal, whatever it is. There's an old proverb, as a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool returns to his folly. And you can take that as saying, when you see a foolish person, you're supposed to call them a vomit-eating dog. Well, I don't think that's the point of the proverb. I think it's a picture of a dog would only eat its vomit when it didn't think there were any better options available. You can't lay a steak next to a dog that's vomited and get it to choose vomit. It'll choose steak every time. We choose foolish, impulsive things because we can't in a moment conceive of anything better than what we're doing. I know that about myself. And so compassion is simply employing that awareness so that I can be good, or at least better, to you. I can be defensive. I carry guilt and shame. And I don't necessarily carry it consciously. Sometimes I do, but guilt and shame. I've done bad things, or I'm not a good thing. I am, like, my essence is deficient. And so I can be defensive if I think I'm being judged or talked about or picked on. It gets better with age, but it's still there. Well, it's because I don't want to get hurt that way again. So when I see other people being defensive, I see them trying to put their guilt that they feel on others. They're always comparing themselves to others. They're always counting their successes by the failures of others. Well, that's easy to be annoyed by. But what I'm actually seeing is somebody dealing with their pain. On and on and on and on I could go. I don't know what the steps are to take about this. And there's nothing quick about it. All of this gets filed under the banner of awareness. And sometimes being dedicated to taking steps, good biblical steps even, becomes a distraction from what the actual issue is. You and I just don't want to get hurt. You and I don't want to be left alone and suffer the pain of exclusion or judgment, ridicule, betrayal, physical, emotional, relational pain. We don't want to get hurt. And steps, sometimes that's a distraction. Well, as long as I follow my steps, then I'm doing the right thing. And we're never actually seeing how much pain makes us prioritize ourselves. So I don't know how to do steps, but I can hopefully incentivize you that the Christ is trying to wake us up to help us see so that we might be aware. So what I'm talking about is compassion for yourself. And us Christians, we're not great at this sometimes, because to be compassionate and tolerant and accepting of yourself feels like we're telling God, you judge too harshly. I'm going to let myself off the hook. But that's not true. Compassion and self-acceptance, compassion toward the self, is simply having the same feeling about yourself that God does. It's a way of saying, rather than judging myself and condemning myself, I'm going to actually try to see myself, to understand that. And once you do that, then you're able to have compassion toward others. You can see yourself and embrace yourself, and the change that comes from that awareness is exactly what you offer others. I see you, I accept you, I embrace what you are and what you're not, and that's where transformation comes from. And so our own awareness of pain gives us material, gives us intel in the creative act of love. Because love is often a creative act. It says, if I am aware that this is what my experience internally has been like, and this is how it has come out in my external behaviors, well, I wonder how this might speak to your inner experience. And suddenly you're becoming the kind of person that moves through relationships, moves through the common human experience with a kind of knowledge, a compassionate wisdom that says, anybody can watch your behaviors and make a judgment about that. But I actually want to be awesome to you. I want to be great to you. I'm going to speak more on compassion this summer. There's some writings coming. And so stay tuned for opportunities to gather around with others and to talk about that in summer groups and that sort of thing. But as always, we're always talking about love and compassion because we believe that God is love and God intends to redeem the world. So this must be the means by which God is going to do that. In closing, I'll read you the meditations from Sunday. And so find a comfortable spot where you can consider these questions, these ideas. If you're driving down the road listening, maybe pull over. I don't want you to get all chilled out in the fast lane. How might your unacknowledged pain be affecting you and your relationships right now? And what might Christ be inviting you to do with this awareness? How might your experiences with loss, grief, disappointment, pain, rejection, betrayal, be a way for you to radiate kindness and understanding toward particular others? And you can take this prayer and meditation into your day, into all your interactions. You can use this in this very hour. I bet there'll be an opportunity to do so. God, show me how that which has hurt me in any way, in any measure, how that can be transformed into compassion, kindness, and wisdom.